Welcome to this RCGP podcast on endometriosis. I'm Dr. Tony Hazel, GP and Deputy Medical Director for e-learning at the RCGP. Today I'll be talking to Dr. Julie Oliver. Julie is an NHS GP in County Durham. She has an extended role in women's health, including expertise in management of the menopause and the provision of intrauterine devices and implants. She's also the chair of the Primary Care Women's Health Forum. Thank you for joining us today, Julie.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
So there's lots to discuss here, and I should start by saying that this podcast is part of a wider course. We would recommend that anyone who's listening also do the e-learning microsite module, which uses a case-based approach to discuss the decision-making process at various points on the journey of a woman who presents with symptoms that might indicate endometriosis. So let's start with the basics. What is endometriosis, and how does it most commonly present?
Right. Thank you, Tony. So endometriosis, it is a really common gynecological condition. It's when we find the presence of endometrial tissue outside of the uterus, so in places that it shouldn't be sitting. So, for instance, it could be outside the uterus and sitting on the tubes on the outside. It could be on the ovaries. It could be in the pouch of Douglas. It could even bury its way into the muscle of the uterus, which causes a very painful condition that's typically called adenomyosis. We see it lots in primary care. And it's a really evolving long-term condition. And it typically presents as a painful condition. So a painful period is a very typical thing we see. And we know that lots of our young women present to us with painful periods. But this is a condition that goes beyond just being a painful period, and it causes problems as a result of this endometrial tissue being in the wrong place, which causes scarring. It can cause infertility problems. And when we look at a population of women that have got fertility problems, there is a high percentage of these women that have endometriosis. Endometriosis has some very strange presentations occasionally. And the unique thing about this is it might be cyclical. So if you've got a woman who's coming with, say, lots of nosebleeds or something unusual like shoulder tip pain or even bleeding as they open their bowels, but it's intermittent, ask if there's any link with the menstrual cycle, because sometimes these are rather unusual but unique symptoms that might come with a diagnosis of endometriosis.
Thank you very much. So as a GP, we'll be the first port of call for a woman who has got symptoms and has not yet received a diagnosis of endometriosis. And as you say, those might be periods, pains, or slightly less common cyclical symptoms like cyclical nosebleeds or something with their period. And I would generally take history and examine and usually arrange a transvaginal ultrasound as the next step. Now, I know that a negative examination and scan doesn't exclude endometriosis, and it can be a bit tricky at that point where you've got negative tests. How do you manage the discussion about what steps to take next if there's nothing specific that we can find in primary care?
That's a really interesting discussion point, isn't it? Because we have to be careful about making a diagnosis without actually any positive findings. But at the same time, we do know that there is a huge delay for these women actually getting a formative diagnosis. So the question is, early on, do you mention it as one of your differentials and discuss about the possibility that endometriosis could be causing the problems? And then do you think about signposting them off to information like the UK charity, there's Endometriosis UK, or we have lots of really useful resources on the NHS website? Or do we just refer these women on straight away to try and get this diagnosis? But at the end of the day, we do know that the traditional diagnostic pathway, which would involve a laparoscopy, for most women at this very early stage probably isn't needed. So as GPs, it's important that we bring this discussion point up, and we also talk about the limitations that we suspect this could be the problem, but not that we know this is the problem. And when you suspect it, you can reassure that woman either, shall we just get on and treat you as if we think this is the problem, as opposed to referring you on to confirm it. We do know that there is a lot of laparoscopies that have gone on in the past where our women get a negative diagnosis, but they still have the same problems. They still come back to you with painful periods, and you're still going to need to manage that. So the new European guidelines that came out fairly recently are talking to us about actually having that discussion and maybe just getting on and treating these women under the suspicion, because the treatment guidelines that we follow are really much the same, whether the diagnosis is endometriosis or it isn't, especially at this early stage. And it's really important at this early stage when you're making that decision about whether to refer or not, making sure that you've done all the sort of simple things, like we said at the beginning, a transvaginal ultrasound scan is a really good way of finding out if you have something like the chocolate cyst or the endometriotic cyst on the ovaries. The ultrasound scanning is getting better at that. There are some clinical features that could pick up endometriosis on an ultrasound scan, but the gold standard would be an MRI. And that's something that we really don't have access to in primary care and should really be left to secondary care to decide who needs to go through the MRI scanner to get that sort of diagnosis. Also, be aware when you're considering endometriosis that some women might not mention some of the things that really are affecting their quality of life. They might be embarrassed to talk about sex and tell you that that's really painful, and so they're avoiding it. There may be some cultural issues about this. There may be some stigma about this. So make sure that you ask all the appropriate questions to help you tease out whether this is the right diagnosis.
Yes, absolutely. I don't really want to be arranging tests like MRIs that I don't know how to interpret. But yeah, I think it's important to have that discussion and that sort of shared decision-making approach, which of course, we're so good at in general practice, we do have those consultation skills. So let's say I've got a young patient who's maybe about to go off to university and she really wants her symptoms treated. She just wants her period sorted. She's not overly keen on the idea of an operation. She's not trying to conceive. Babies are years away for her. What are the principles of management in primary care?
So we think this is the condition that's made worse by the presence of menstrual cycles. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to stop the menstrual cycle process. So if you think about what different options we've got, we could start off initially on something like a non-hormonal option, which would simply be analgesia. You've got to be cautious about your analgesics, though, and we know that there's this never-ending balance between prescribing simple and effective pain relief against the long-term and inappropriate use of things like opiates and gabapentinoids and that sort of thing. So we recommend just looking at simple pain relief, over-the-counter stuff if it's not been tried, like paracetamols or NSAIDs. And I don't think there's any evidence to suggest one NSAID is superior over another. So if the woman's suitable for that, that could be your option there. And then, of course, go on, think about contraceptives. If you've got a young girl off to uni, doesn't want to conceive, you're going to be talking about contraceptive options as well. Any contraceptive option would be okay for her. But if you think about what causes anovulation or gets rid of cycles, something like a combined hormonal contraceptive pill may well do the trick, and you may decide to try and eliminate as many of the bleeds on that. So you might try and run three packets back to back in the tricycling off-license route, or you might need to run it continuously with only that small bleed to get rid of unplanned or unusual bleeding. Something like the progesterone-only pill is an option. You could try the injection as an option. You could try implants. All of these, of course, are off license, but we're trying to get that amenorrhea outcome. And of course, we also know that intrauterine contraception with hormonal treatment inside them are fantastic at making periods get very light and also a really good option. So have that discussion as you would do with any young person going off to uni about contraception, what they might want, and then add in the fact that they've got painful periods to that discussion and pick out what you think with her might be the best treatment option. She might need to try one first. It might not be so good. She might try something else, and that's all okay. You're giving her good contraception, and also you're trying to get rid of any unplanned or unscheduled bleeding, or definitely get rid of any pain that goes with the bleeding.
Absolutely. And I think the advice from the FSRH that we can use tailored contraception back to back routinely has been a real game changer. So let's sort of move ahead a bit. So at a first presentation, we've maybe discussed endometriosis. We've possibly coded suspected endometriosis and the patient hasn't wanted referral. And then a few years down the line, she's trying to conceive or what we're doing isn't working and she wants referral, which we do. Now, obviously, in an ideal world, she'd be seen next month, but we both work in the NHS and we know that she might be waiting for months or even years. What can we do for her in the meantime while she's waiting?
That's a really good question, isn't it? Because the problem is, all the treatments we've talked about, all the things we'd send our young girls off to university, our younger women using contraceptions, If they want to conceive, you have to stop them. And then what happens when you stop them? We get back again to these problems with painful and sometimes also heavier periods. And of course, we've all got guidelines that we're going to be following as to when to refer a woman into the secondary care services with fertility. And usually, most people's guidelines would have at least 1 year, maybe even longer before you can refer in. But if this woman has got considerable pain and you're suspecting endometriosis, then the bottom line is your only options are the non-hormonal options whilst you're waiting for that referral. But you may consider referring that woman in sooner than waiting the full 1 or 2 years, depending what's in that pathway, because we know that in a population of women that are trying to conceive and having trouble conceiving, it's a much more common occurrence. We see a lot more women with endometriosis. Don't forget, if you're struggling with very painful periods, you may well be finding that intercourse is really painful. And of course, that on itself is going to affect your ability to conceive. So the stresses that go with that, the worries of not conceiving, low mood and anxiety, really common going with this worry of, am I going to conceive alongside a chronic painful condition? Also, don't forget to get those women to be looking after themselves. You know, going into the fertility treatment pathway, the healthier the women are, the better equipped they are to get pregnant, carry a baby, and come out the other end in a fit state. So healthy weight advice, alcohol, smoking, all the usual lifestyle advice are really important as well for these women. So when you're waiting for secondary care, which can take a while now, we know there's a bit of a wait. We've got to consider as well managing these women as they may well be struggling with their mental health. Chronic pain, as you all know, leads to anxiety, depression, often time off work, low self-esteem. And remember, you are very good at managing women, well, not only women, all patients, but particularly in this case, women that have chronic pain. Remember, you will have access to other services that may help and support these women. And it's really important that you take them seriously, you listen to what's going on. And if you need to see them back again, you know that you can't speed up the referral process. That's all taking time in the background. But being a listening ear and using your skills in managing chronic pain is really important for these women. And then, of course, when they get into the secondary care services, you might want to just give a little bit of a heads up and say you may well end up getting a few more investigations at this stage if you're trying to conceive. They're going to want to see what's going on inside your tummy. They may want to treat anything that they may find. And so it's really important just to be able to give them a little bit of a heads up as what may happen.
So finally, I'd really like to discuss the cohort of women who are around menopausal age. No one really knows the cause of endometriosis, and it usually improves after the menopause because it's related to the cycle. But some women do have ongoing symptoms. What would be your approach to this cohort?
This group of women, once they hit their menopause and their own natural sources of estrogen start to diminish, you would think that the actual problem should start to reduce. But this is a long-term condition that causes scarring. And sometimes scarring's there all the time. So the result of scarring could be that you get ongoing pain. Or then think about the woman you might want to consider adding some HRT to. You may find that some of these pains start coming back or getting worse with this. So the bottom line is, you've just got to be cautious about a woman who's had endometriosis in the past, even if she's had a full pelvic clearance and lots of laser treatment to get rid of bits and bobs of endometriosis that might have been there at the time. Potentially, by adding in hormones, they may come awake again. They may cause problems again. And just because that woman might have had a full gynae pelvic clearance, that doesn't mean to say there might not be adhesions or things going on that could continue to give that woman problems. So if that woman is getting considerable problems that you can't manage, you may well need to call on your support from secondary care again just to review her and see what else could be going on. You can use HRTs in these women. Don't feel that you can't use it. But the guidelines would suggest that these women need combined hormones just to prevent any potential overgrowth of little lesions that might be left if you gave that woman estrogen alone. So the guidelines would suggest give both of those hormones for both for these women. If you're stuck and you're really struggling, you may want to ask a menopause specialist if you've got one in your area and you're lucky enough to have that support nearby. And also, there are other products sometimes come out of secondary care. Sometimes we use a bit of Tibolone for this group of women. And certainly, some of the GPs who are listening out there may be comfortable using this. It's been used for a long time, and it is certainly a favourite that's used in secondary care a lot.
Fantastic. Thank you. That's a really good summary. And that is a really important point about using combined HRT, even if the woman's had a hysterectomy, because we don't always think that they might have pockets of endometriosis left over. So I think that's all we've got time for today. I'd like to say a big thank you to Julie for joining us to discuss endometriosis. Please do look at the microsite e-learning module which accompanies this podcast. Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this RCGP podcast, then please have a look at the e-learning website to find others on a variety of subjects. Thank you and goodbye.